RSN Summer Breakfast Club.
Glenn McFarlane, good morning to you.
Good morning, Maisie. How are you?
I'm good. What did you watch more of yesterday? What was happening over in the US or the cricket?
I was torn. Absolutely
so
torn.
I
think the only time I've ever prayed for rain in Sydney, I was thinking this, I need to, I would have liked one of those little rooms where you had the split screen. That would have been perfect yesterday. But it was either watching the cricket, which was really important with Will Pekowski making his debut and exciting and that, or whether it was watching House of Cards on, you know, on the other network. It was extraordinary viewing out of the US, wasn't it? It was like it was a, you know, an episode of House of Cards that, I don't know if you've watched House of Cards.
And
I know
that's a couple of seasons
in. Quite controversial now, given the actor playing Frank Underwood. We don't mention his name anymore.
Yes.
Kevin Spacey. I think I was probably gravitating a little bit. I'm a bit of a US political history junkie.
Are you?
Yeah, I love all that sort of stuff. I'm a Planet America type guy. I don't know if you watched that on the ABC where, you know, John Barron and Chaz dissecting the... but it was interesting because I really wanted to watch Will Pekowski, so it was a really difficult thing. So the rain, I was doing a rain dance. I was happy
That was good timing.
Actually, the way some of those guys were dressed in the US Capitol, they looked like they were doing a rain dance too. There were some extraordinary, weird-looking characters there, wasn't there?
Have you been to Washington?
Nah, I really would love to go to Washington. It's one place on my bucket list. I'd absolutely love to do it. As I say, I really love US history. And we're living through it at the moment in a lot of ways, aren't we?
It's
extraordinary times. But I'd love to go there. It's one area that I'd really love to, you know, to go and probably spend a week there, to be honest. I'm not sure we're going back to the States anytime soon. The closest I got was New York. I went to New York in September 2019. It was the closest I've got. It was really awkward getting there in terms of I would have loved it. I was on a pretty tight schedule. It was a work/work inadverted commas trip.
Oh, that's right. The junket. Yeah.
Work inadvertis comment. But I would have loved to have gone because it's just a place you would love to go. The history that's there and yeah, well, I'm not sure number 45 is going to be remembered too fondly, is he?
No, I went on a tour of the Capitol building.
Did you? So you've been?
About, we went on a honeymoon about 4 or 5 years
You didn't have the big coat on like some of those guys with the horns and...
Didn't think about stealing anything from there either.
Oh, God. How good was it? Was it good fun? Was it...
The Pelosi offices? Nah, it was... It's an amazing building.
Mm.
It's a beautiful building. And, yeah, to see what happened yesterday was quite sobering.
Oh, yeah. It was like,
and that whole Washington district. One thing I do remember Washington is basically this huge parkland all the way down with museums lining the streets. It's an amazing place. It's Canberra on drugs. That's what it is. Yeah, it's beautiful. Anyway, so I'm walking down in the middle of Washington, down the park, and there's about 20 blokes kicking a Sharon.
Really? You're kidding? There you go.
There you go.
There you go. The little
sort
things
of
you actually
mini
see.
Mini game of footy. So that was very strange.
Wow.
But yeah, it's an amazing place. We basically just stayed there and went to museums for 5 days.
See, that's what you could do. That would be awesome. As I say, I love that whole side of the politics. I've got the two books by my bed that I both got for Christmas. This will tell you a little bit about me. One of them's Barack Obama because I really like biographies and I'm 3/4 of the way through it already.
Yep.
I love political biographies like that. And the other one, Paul Hogan.
Paul Hogan.
So there's the eclectic sort of view that I've got, the Paul Hogan autobiography. They're a little different, Man who started on a Sydney Harbour Bridge as opposed to man who becomes 44.
Yes. I got the other American politics book I got for Christmas was Siege, Trump Under Fire by Michael Wolff.
I would really like to read that. Is it? Have you had a...
No, I haven't started that one
what,
yet.
What I think is going to be...
Probably needs a few extra chapters.
I was going to say, what I think is going to be absolutely fascinating now is when we've got less than 2 weeks to go now, might be less than 2 weeks if Amendment 25 goes through. Mm. But what's going to come out now and what's he going to do next? I think that's the thing we're all...
He won't be doing much on Twitter and Facebook because they keep having to take down everything he says.
Unbelievable, isn't it? My daughter, this is bizarre, my young daughter got banned from TikTok, which is weird. She did a dance. She did a dance.
It wasn't like, one of those like twerking ones.
No, I've seen it. It was really inoffensive dance.
Okay.
You're banned from... And Donald gets away with keeping it on for a period of time and then all of a sudden, fortunately, yesterday they...
Banned from TikTok.
Banned from TikTok.
Yeah. Jeez, some of the, I was showing Craig some of the things on my TikTok the other day. Yeah. It's,
you a TikTok man?
I've only recently become.
Oh, they all say that.
It's shocking.
Really?
Like, you waste your life on it. Because mine is basically Bunnings.
Bunnings do TikTok.
No, they do a few, or home improvement type stuff.
Right. Yeah.
But basically, you type in your details, and it's quite scary how the algorithm works.
Yeah.
And mine's all like DIY tips. I also have like lawn mowing on there as well. There's a curator who has a TikTok, and it's lawn porn. That's what it is.
Really? Well,
it's amazing.
My other daughter follows my youngest daughter, who's been banned.
Yeah.
And she said, no, she's done nothing wrong, but clearly something's gone wrong there somewhere, and she's off and not happy about it either.
It's stiff.
It is.
They must have really cracked down on things.
They did, but Donald off social media. Is he back though? Is today? I don't think he's done anything yet. He was a 24 hour. Was it a 24 hour?
No, 12. So he should be back on now, Donald. Oh, I don't know.
He'd be ready to unload, wouldn't he? It's interesting. Like, it's interesting to have Donald banned from social media, and yet he's got the briefcase there beside him that could determine a bit going forward.
No, he's back on.
He's back on.
These last two tweets are no longer available, but he's not banned. I don't know if you could see his profile or not yesterday, but you can definitely see it now. So that's the latest from
it is,
Donald.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll get an update from him later.
Fascinating
on
watching, wasn't it? It was next level. And we've seen a bit of that in 2020. It's not to realise we're going to have it in 2021 as well.
A few things happening over the last 12 months. Seems funny to think this time last year, we were all sort of getting on with life, looking forward to 2020. And
I'm sick of living through historical moments. Yeah. I'm done with them.
Some normal,
give me a break.
Normal life.
Yeah,
nice.
Absolutely.
We got a bit of normality yesterday. Yep. Nice to see Will Pukowski make his debut. But we can just lock him in for the next 10 years, can't we?
Oh, absolutely. lock him in. Like, he just, I don't know, it sounded weird. As strange as it was with David Warner, and there's a question mark on whether he should have played. Oh, he should not have played.
No.
But after that, and Warner goes out, it just seemed to be a bit of, I don't know, it seemed to solidify, the whole group there, Pukowski. He was great. He was good to watch.
Yep.
I love his attitude. Unfortunately, his parents couldn't get up there. That's probably the only frustrating thing. They had to watch it on television. But lock him in for 10 to 12 years. Like, he's 22, so it may even be longer. And you've got Cam Green as well. Like, I'm not saying lock Cam Green in for another 10 to 12 years, but, gee, we're not far off that either. So
I actually think we've got two
exciting
generational players there that will be part of our test team for the best part of a decade and a half.
Which is exciting. And you don't often say that about players as young as they are.
No, and I don't like to go too early. But what we have done on RSN 97 especially, I mean, I was just checking my text messages yesterday. Whitey was talking about Will Pukowski in December 2016.
Yeah.
So we followed him for a long time. And, of course, he had that amazing under-19s tournament where I think he scored four or five centuries in the shorter form of the game. And one day format that the under-19s World Cup was back then and still is, I think. So, even from then, I think he scored like five centuries out of six innings.
Yeah.
It was just ridiculous against the world's best. But the thing that struck me yesterday, he batted through the opening session, so a massive tick to him to get through that. But then on top of that, it just looked like he was playing state cricket.
He did. He looked really comfortable.
So much time at the crease, and he just makes everything. I heard a bit of the commentary yesterday on the radio driving home, and he just makes everything look easy, and I think all elite sportsmen who are amazing do that.
Yeah,
they just have this ability to play in slow motion.
Yeah,
and that's what he looked like yesterday.
Mm. And it's rare. Level. It's quite rare, isn't it? Like, the really good ones do it. You can see some of, you know, you looked at Joe Burns and you looked at how mentally fragile he was, in the first couple of tests, and that just wasn't there yesterday. And it may come and go. Like, that's the thing.
Yeah.
It comes and goes in terms of, you know, your ability and form and your confidence levels. But he was confident yesterday. I really like the aggressive side to him as well.
Yeah.
To take the game on. And he was just really impressive to watch, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll hear a little bit from Will Pukowski later on in the show. We'll play that after 8 o'clock. I also want to park this one for after 8. India's fielding. What is going on?
I know.
Do they even practice?
You should.
I remember, who was it? Was it Greg Chappell who had coached Sachin Tendulkar? And there was a couple of the old guys who'd been there for a long time. Yep. He was trying to change this culture and get everyone together and fielding practice and a bit of fitness in there as well. I think this, whenever he coached in you, which I think was, you know, either through the late 90s or early 2000s,
yeah.
And he just said they were just uncontrollable.
Didn't care.
No, I'm not going to cut.
No, I'm too good for that.
Yeah, I'm a batter. I don't need to worry about it.
You used to think that when you were playing like under 12s and that, but not when you're playing test cricket.
I know. So,
where did you used to field, Maisie? Where was your favourite spot?
No, I used to field in close. I didn't mind fielding in close. Mm. Yeah, I was the idiot who used to stand at short leg or even when we had quicks on. Yeah, I would field in close. Other than that, yeah, no, I'm sort of in the covers.
Yeah, I love the covers.
Yeah.
I didn't like
get a lot of action there.
You do. And I was one of those idiots, and I continued on when I played vets cricket, where you walk in with a bowler, and I played my first game of vets cricket, and a couple of blokes come up to me and said, this was at Greensboro, and they said, you don't walk in with a bowler. We don't expect you, that you don't do that sort of stuff anymore. We're older people now. We don't want to be doing that. So, and I remember the next day I couldn't walk because I kept walking in with a bowler and on my toes and ready to go. But I didn't like fielding in slips. Hated slips. Just
did
hated you? The angle of the ball coming off at you. Didn't like
did
it.
You?
I could take catches anywhere in slips. Nah.
Really?
Not my go. No.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
The angle.
I didn't mind.
I didn't like him. So,
okay.
Yeah, not good.
No, I didn't mind standing in slips. Mm. Let's head to Bernard in Glen Iris. Wants to talk about the wicket at the SCG. Mm. Bernard, good morning.
Yeah, g'day, boys. All the best for the new year.
You
good
too.
On you, Bernard.
Listen, I know there's an old saying in cricket, you can't judge a wicket until the two sides bat on it. But Ben Egan, when they pulled the it hadn't stopped raining up there for 3 weeks. When they pulled the covers off, it was brown.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, yeah, they talk about the MCG wicket over the last few years, but, yeah, that is a fair dick of disgrace.
Well, I did think we'd get a bit more life in it.
Yeah, yesterday. Absolutely.
Admittedly, I mean, the Pekoski batted really well, but he wasn't really troubled a hell of a lot. Warner didn't look quite as convincing in his short stay at the crease. But, I mean, for all the talk we got about rain, bit of juice in the wicket, et cetera, it just didn't happen. I'll tell you what, if we get the second test at the SCG, there might be a bit more life in that wicket because they haven't started preparing.
They haven't,
so they're going to have to either resurrect what the Australia A match was played on, or they're going to have to go maybe New Zealand style and get one of the other ones off the square.
Well, they really need to know. That's a good point from Bernard, I reckon, there as well. Really good point. The SCG groundsman, they need to know. They need to know as of today. Today's the day, I think, where they need to know what's going on. So it's going to be fascinating to see what happens with India and how much is this basically the Indian team that are not wanting to play at the Gabba as opposed to the Indian cricket board who don't want to play there as well. I think it's more the team than the hierarchy. But, we just need to stop all this Chinese whispers and let's just work it out. Where is it going to be played?
They don't do a lot of talking, do they?
They don't, no. Which is interesting.
But we hear a lot of whispers.
You do. They do a lot of talking, but they do it in the hushed little tones in the corner, I think, don't they?
Yes.
But
maybe leak a lot of things to journalists.
Definitely, definitely.
But there's not a lot of chat going on.
No.
Press conferences.
There's not a lot of official discussion, is there, in that sense? And you could see Tim Payne, how frustrated he was pre this test. He was really frustrated. He was angry, because he wants a bit of certainty. There's not a lot of certainty in world sport at the moment, is there? But I think they want a bit of certainty. And the fact that it should be, I think the Cricket Australia stuffed up and basically should have flipped the test. It's no question that we should be playing in Brisbane now and then we play in Sydney to finish. But didn't happen, so now we need to know where the fourth test is going to be played.
Early SMS here. Will Pekoski was in perfect position to play every shot. The pitch looks 25 yards when he's batting from Crazza. Exactly right.
Good point.
Spot on from Crazza. Well, you won't drag Ben Everill down because he'll be up and about after the PGA Tour got underway. It is the now traditional trip to Hawaii to start the new year. And Ben Everill joins us on the line from PGATour.com. Ben, good morning. Welcome back to RSN and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you guys too. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's tough as always to start the year in Maui.
Jeez, very tough life.
Beautiful.
Now, are you covering it from... We're in this strange landscape now where a lot of journalists are covering things remotely. Are you you over there in Hawaii or are you back at home in the States at the moment?
Yeah, when you work for the tour itself, you get lucky and you get to actually still go. I have to get through a few protocols. But yes, I'm just... out on course now, Lapping it up as they've just teed off the first round. We've actually got a little bit of rain, would you believe, one of those little sun showers, but nothing that won't blow over in a second and nothing that'll be too strong, but a little bit of wind and something to test these guys a bit later maybe, but yeah. Beautiful day otherwise.
How good is that? Now, Adam Scott, Mark Leishman, Cameron Smith, the three Aussies in the field. What are we expecting from these three at the start of 2021?
You know, it's real interesting because usually the Aussies are the ones that are ready to hit the ground running because they've played the Aussie summer. But without that this year and without that sort of form to take in, they sort of fall into just like everybody else. So it'll be real sort of study in how they go and what they're able to do. Now, look, Leish has struggled with form of late, so I'd like to see him maybe hopefully just put something up, you know, no-cut event, 30-something guys. He's got a good chance to just sort of get himself back into form. And, of course, Smitty, he's been playing well. Last time we saw him, he almost won the Masters, and he has form in Hawaii, having been, the defending champion next week at the Sony Open. So, I expect maybe looking out of Smitty, a little bit of rust out of Scotty maybe, but you never know. It's the same for everyone, isn't it? Because we haven't had that Aussie summer.
Yeah, and Ben, the AFL players have just started back over here, and some of them have got some of the best mullets going around in the country. But Cam Smith's 2021 version looks luxuriant, doesn't it?
Oh, it's sensational stuff from Smitty. The mullet. Like, I haven't seen him in a while. Saw him here the other day, and I just had to take a photo. I don't know if you saw it on Twitter there, but posted a photo for everyone to have a look. But he is just flowing Joe Dirt style. And you know, like, he loves his rugby league and he loves his Cam Smith as well. And, he just told me, actually, expected to get filthier, were his words. He hopes it much filthier before the end of this season. So we'll see how it goes.
How low is it? Is it sort of shoulder length at the moment?
Yeah, and it's, it could get a bit more business in the front. But, of course, he wears a hat most of the time, so it gets a little bit ragged because of that. And he's been wearing the Aussie style wide brim too, like around. So he's expecting to maybe wear that in competition today. We'll see how that. He's not far off being off, so we'll see if he does bust that out. He's really just trying to show that look. He's not afraid to go the full Queenslander, if you will. He's ready for it.
Oh, I like that he's embracing that. Now, in terms of the big hitters this week, or the big guns, I should say, in the world of golf. What are we expecting from the likes of Bryson DeChambeau, etc., Patrick Reed, Colin Morikawa, Dustin Johnson? What have they all been up to in the off season or short off season where they get a couple of weeks break over Christmas, etc.?
Yeah, taking a couple of weeks off, and as I said, we usually come in here a little bit refreshed and whatnot. So they'll be trying to ease their way in. I expect DJ is going to be the most interesting one because clearly he was in some sensational form at the back end of last year. And now he's won that Masters, he's going to go one of two ways, isn't he? He won the FedEx Cup, the Masters. He was second and first in just about every event he played last year at the back end. Is he going to sort of kick on, or is he going to sort of, sit back and feel like he's done enough for a little while? We'll get a real input into his psyche, I think, to see how he's going there. And JT looks hungry. I expect he'll contend. He's the defending champion here. I think he'll have a real crack. And the other guy I thought was going to win was Xander Schauffele, who won 2 years ago and was in a playoff last year to lose. He turned up here and let us know that he had a pretty bad case of COVID in the last sort of week and a half. So
right,
he's a little bit run down. He's not sure how he's going to go. But yeah, like, look, he was pretty sick when he got into a playoff with Rory at the HSBC Champions in China a couple of years ago. So maybe beware the sick golf. I'm not sure. It's definitely someone to watch today.
Racing tomorrow at Flemington too. We're back at headquarters, and finally we've got some nice weather. It's been looking dicey all week, but the beacon of light was always going to be the weekend where we got some sunshine. Yeah. It's going to be a cracker tomorrow at Flemington. We start in race six. Again, don't forget, a bit of a later quaddy tomorrow, 5:20 the first leg. Which is good news for everyone too, because doesn't the banter on the punters' clubs just go right into Saturday night?
You just need to hold fire. Just hold fire. Don't shoot off too much.
Darn New Zealand races.
I know.
Yes.
I know.
New Zealand more purple than ever.
Gets in the way of breakfast.
I know. So it has been extended chat on the Punters Club WhatsApp groups over the last couple of weeks. But it is the Lexus Handicap at 20 past 5 tomorrow, over 2,000 metres, $3.60 Mosh Music leading the way, and a couple of our old favourites in here from times gone past as well on the Breakfast Club. Dean, have you got a clear top selection here?
I'm with the favourite here, Mosh Music. I'm pretty much with the market in the top three chances. Mosh Music's ready to win. She's had two runs back. She's going very well. And I think getting to Flemington, little weight drop, she's going to be hard to beat. The horse that beat her last start was Defibrillate, and I think he can run very well again. He was only second up as well. It was a good performance there at Caulfield. He didn't race as far back as I thought he might, and got through and won. Again, through the same race, number five, Pancho, who I thought ran well. That race structure didn't really suit him. He likes to probably better at Flemington and likes them to roll along at a bit stronger speed. And I think that'll happen here. The speed looks okay. One of those horses that'll be on the speed, I think, and his big odds is number seven, Runaway. He's tried a bit of everything. He's run in the Melbourne Cup. He's been over jumps. His first up run was very good, considering he missed the start and it was over an unsuitable trip. I just think he's got a little chance at big odds. I'll be putting him in the quaddie. And the other one I'll be including is the Sydney visitor, Mashareb, who does drop 7 kilos on its last run, gets the blinkers back on, and is a horse that races up on the speed. So Mosh Music's the one to beat, but I'd want to have a few running for us in the first leg.
All right, Macca.
Oh, this is the important, the Rammer readout, isn't it?
Not yet.
Hold fire.
We'll have a chat
about the race with Dino first, but I like the enthusiasm. Haven't seen that enthusiasm from Scott Gullen the last couple of weeks.
I was ready to jump and launch.
But Mosh Music hits the market at 360 out from 320. Defibrillate on the second line of betting at 480. Pancho 7, WT at 10. Dino, your on-top selection, Mosh Music, went up 320, now at $3.60. So good to see a little bit of a better quote available now, who have kept their powder dry between the opening quote on Wednesday. Were you a little surprised how short Mosh Music went up? I know it's your on-top selection, and you've thought you've found a nice little winner for the punters, but do you think the fact that two runs back down the track, were you hoping a little better than the 320 that opened? What sort of quote do you think she should be?
Yeah, I thought she might have been the one that, when the prices opened up Wednesday afternoon, we might sneak onto, but the people at tab.com.au were well awake to that. I don't know if she'll touch $4, but I think she should be about a $4 chance. So it'll be interesting to see how this market does play out. But, if you're backing one that's trending towards a win, I think it's Mosh Music.
I like that. Now I can do the numbers. The numbers are.
Go for it.
I sound like Marie Van Dorsler.
You look nervous. No, I know that.
I am. I'm nervous.
You've done this before, Mac.
No, I have. I don't know why I'm nervous, Dino. I've lost the plot, I think.
So, wouldn't pick him in the yard.
So the numbers are. There was, because Quinny mentioned the word run before. It got me a little bit upset. So the numbers are 3, 4, 5, 7, and 9.
3, 4, 5, 7, and 9, first leg of the quaddie. We head to the Chester Marathon Stakes in race 7, 6 o'clock this one, jumping over 1,400 metres. And riding the wave is a $3.30 favourite. But interesting to hear Greg Urell yesterday on RSN with a push for a couple of runners, including his own Blaze Jowski. How do you see it folding out here, Dean? Are you with the market with riding the wave?
Yeah, I am. The most important bit of news about this race is the King of Hastings has been scratched this morning. So that changes the complexion of the race, because he's on the equal second favourite and a very good chance. But riding the wave's the progressive horse in this race. And I thought it was a really smart move by Lindsay Smith last start. He could have run him in the Standish handicap, and he'd have been well out of the handicaps, but he ran him in the restricted race, got another win on the board for good money, and now all of a sudden he gets into this race, and he's pretty well placed riding the wave. I think from barrier three, he's got good 1,400-metre form in New Zealand. I wouldn't be surprised if he used that draw to advantage and his fitness and either took it up or was right on the pace, and I think it'd be hard to beat. The dangers, Too Brave Song, hasn't raced over 1,400 metres since February 2018, so the Stodens have really stayed away from that. But as he's got older and a bit more settled and a bit stronger, he's got very good 1,300 metre form. I think he can extend it out. Now, that run in the Christmas Stakes was very good. King of Hastings was six. Next best, I think, probably Vacillators there with a chance. His run last time out was good. Viral's the other one that I think's got a terrific chance. He drops 8 kilos on that last run. So he's third pick, Viral, and fourth pick is Vacillator, who won well last start, but everything went absolutely right for him. So I've put him in for fourth. But I think riding the wave, you're looking for the horses well and truly on the up and in winning form. He fits the profile.
Now, Greg Urell yesterday on Racing Pulse gave a really good push for Blaise Jowski, pretty confident that he can recapture his best form. How have you got Blaise Jowski placed in the run?
Look, I just think often these sort of horses, and he had a very good win last summer when he won a stakes race. I think he won the Shaftesbury Avenue. And often when they win a good race, then it puts them in a bracket where they battle to win again for a while. And I just think 60 kilos and the outside draw are the little challenges. He's got a good record at the distance, and he's just got to settle again. He raced better at Caulfield than he did his first two runs this time in. But I'm just going to go around him, but because he's one of my old favourites, it's with great reluctance.
Dino, you were very confident with riding the wave on New Year's Day and looked after the punters there. Did you think you'd got the photo finish?
Well, I hadn't given up completely because the optical illusion there was one jockey was a long way in front of the other. Jordan Childs was a long way in front of Will Price. But when you looked at the horses, they were obviously riding the wave at narrowly won. But I hadn't given up, but I'd have copped a dead heat as they went across the line.
I was a pessimist, Dino. I thought we were done for done like a dinner.
So poor old Elberg. What does he have to do to win again? But with riding the wave again tomorrow, Dino, you mentioned the interesting facts about stepping to 1400, where he does have a good record over in New Zealand with the two wins and two placings. How hard is it, though, assessing the New Zealand form with distances and track conditions compared to the Australian races? Do you almost work off a blank canvas on the back of the last two Flemington performances, or do you factor in what he did over in New Zealand?
Oh, I take that on board, but yeah, you're right, it's a different sort of ball game. But what I do like is that he's had a really good grounding, and it's been a really steady build-up. Like, Lindsay Smith's raced him virtually once a month, the first three runs. Then it was a 13-day backup, and now it's an 8-day backup. So he's really grinding him down to, like, this is grand final day, you'd say, for his preparation, and then he'll go away for the winter. But I'm really looking forward to seeing him measure up tomorrow.
Now, King of Hastings has been scratched from tomorrow. We had Sam Friedman on the show yesterday, and he was absolutely superb. And he was pretty upbeat about how the horse performed first up. I know you've assessed King of Hastings because he was in this field, and he does contest race 6 in Sydney tomorrow. What were you going to say about King of Hastings second up tomorrow?
I was going to say that I thought he'd get a really good run in this race, and it was an interesting challenge for him second up 1400, because he ran in the Magic Millions Guineas at 1400 last year. And that was a really high-pressure race, won or first past the post by Alligator Blood, subsequently losing the race on a positive swab. But King of Hastings ran all right in that race. He ran well, so I thought that, He, long as he ran the 1400, he'd be a good chance. And I imagine his Magic Millions bound again with that going to Sydney tomorrow.
Yeah, it is an interesting race, isn't it? So Dino's numbers in the second leg, numbers 7, 2, 10, 6 and 3.
Oh, you've stumbled.
What did I say?
The scratching.
Oh, of course I did too. I've taken, I'm out. King of Hastings. You know what? All it does is just makes it a little cheaper. The percentage goes up.
No, I think we throw an extra one in the last leg.
Do we? Yeah, we do. I've got that. I've actually got that one written down. Oh,
he is rattled.
I'm rattled. Oh, Dino, I'm rattled.
You even declared you've got a cheat sheet.
I know. The warning signs were there.
Quinny just said we've got an extra one in the last leg.
The wheels are falling off. The Sepult Salinger Plate is race 8 tomorrow at Flemington, benchmark 70 over 1,800 metres. And it's a pretty wide-open affair here. Dean, is this a tough one to narrow down in the quaddie legs?
I think there's a lot of little chances in this race, but I'm pretty keen that number 10, Garen Pirro, can win here. I thought he ran a good race first up, and then last week at Flemington was a really good run, at Caulfield, I should say. And I just think he's ready for the 1,800 metres and got a great winning chance. Four High and Dry is a horse I've always had a really good opinion of. He's sort of been, his career's been punctuated by injuries and things of the like, but he found winning form last start, and I think he can measure up again. Seven Ridgewood Drive's an interesting runner. First up at Flemington, he ran quite well, and he finished just behind Garen Pirro. He hasn't had a run since, but he goes straight to the 1,800, and he stays at Flemington where he seems to do his best racing, so I'm giving him a chance. and 13 Tycoon Becks unbeaten to date, two from two. And she's won at Kyneton and at Moonee Valley. She gets onto a bigger track here, but I actually think that'll suit her. She'll roll along in front and give a good sight for a long way. I think you can make a case for a lot of little chances in this race, but principally, I think they're the four better chances.
Money has come here for Tycoon Beck, who's been $5 into $4.40 to maintain that undefeated record. Dino's on top selection, Garen Piero, a $5 second elect, and there's been money for High and Dry, $11 into $8. Dino, of the runners prominent in the market that we haven't thrown in the quaddy, number 6, Not Mine, a $9.50 chance, and on the fourth line of betting at that quote, has been a model of consistency this campaign, but has just been maybe a length off winning form. Do you think that will be the case again tomorrow?
He's better suited back to from the 2,000 metres. I just don't think he ran the trip last start. He looked a winning chance. It's just the time between wins for him. It's just a lot of outs, but he'll run a good race. He's well drawn. Parade d'Étoile is the other one. They'll both run very well. Parade d'Étoile is the opposite. Got a very wide draw to contend with, but gets Damien Lane, and they were the two I was sort of mulling over, and they're the next two in the betting. But no, happy with the four that we've got.
Some praise coming for you, Macker, off the SMS, in the way that you paused between the numbers.
I don't get it all right, but I do pause. Is that Marie Van Dorsley? You know the Tats Lotto numbers? You've got to pause before you read the numbers.
Well, people have got to write it down, but I like what Maisie's done. Bit of footy coach. Now, normally he's giving me a clip and trying to keep me grounded and whatnot, but he sensed that Macca was a little rattled, flat, and he's giving you a pump up.
Positive endorsement. That's the art of coaching, that's what they call it. So, something that I didn't do when I was coaching my son's team.
You'd be very flustered there as well.
Very flustered, very angry. But the numbers are 10, 4. 7 and 13.
Oh, well done.
Is that just that pause enough for you, coach?
I'll throw one more question at Dino before we pat you on the back again. Are you surprised, Dino, how well supported Tycoon Beck has been considering the significant rise in class?
Yes. I think she gets the little bit of weight relief, but I thought that she'd be obviously well in the betting because she's unbeaten to date, but I think if you like her, I'm thinking she'll get back towards closer to $5 come race time.
All right, there we go. Race 8 tomorrow at Flemington. We finish in race 9 at 7:05, which is beautiful. So I actually love the races finishing at this time. You're just sitting down about to start dinner and watch the last. You're either up and about while you're scoffing down your sausages on a Saturday night or a little bit down. But Benchmark 70, over 1,100 metres, the Kennedy Sprint we finish with. And talking of wide open fields, this is one of them. I Did It For Love is the favourite at $6.50 for Paddy Payne. How do we pick a winner in the last year, Dean?
Well, I'm going to stay at the top here, Andrew. I'm going to go with number one, Not Enough Effort, who resumes from his spell. Thought it was an unusual preparation last time in that he's a short course horse, but he started at 1,200 metres, and I just don't think he ever really recovered from that. And he was hitting wet tracks, and whilst he'd won on soft ground, he was on genuine soft ground last time in, and he's had two recent jump outs at Cranbourne and looks to be absolutely flying this horse. So I'm going to go with him. He's a winner down the straight, number one, to beat Four China Affair, who I thought ran really well down the straight last start, considering that he drew closer to the inside and the winner Sword of Mercy came towards the outside. And Sword of Mercy's won again since, and all of a sudden China Affair's got a wider draw. For that, he does go up 5 kilos. Because he is coming back a grade. 9, Exeter, first run for the Danny O'Brien's stable, formerly with Hayes Dabenig, looks to be going well at the jump outs, capable of running a race fresh in this sort of grade. Often his runs fresh have been at much higher grade than this. 5, I Did It For Love, really cost himself last start. Looked the winner probably at about the 200 metre mark, but wanted to lay in under pressure and really didn't help his cause at all. A couple of little gear changes there with him. I think there was certainly the cross noseband going on. Just might help him become a bit more tractable. He's a chance. And Spirit of Acquire, they never really got a chance to have a crack at them first up. He doesn't win out of turn, but gets a senior rider in Noel Callow. He can certainly improve. But I'm happy enough to be with Not Enough Effort in the last.
All right, so you mentioned a couple of barrier trials there for Not Enough Effort. How much do you watch barrier trials during the week, Dean? Are you in front of your computer 2 hours, 3 hours a day studying that? I'm interested in how you do your form around those.
Pretty much. Yeah. That's just the trials there. I put a lot into them. Fast horses, you expect them to trial well. It's not I'm more interested if a fast horse doesn't trial well, because they should trial well. But you look at, you know, your staying horses, see if they run through the line, or if they, you know, if they seem to have done something a little bit out of the unusual. And that's what I'd take from not enough effort. He's a very capable horse. So, as I said, you'd expect him to trial well, but I think he's probably gone a bit better than average in his two jump outs leading into this race.
And Dino, Know That Girl, started favourite in that on Boxing Day in that Hidden Legend race with I Did It For Love. Reasons behind that?
Look, I thought the draw was a disadvantage to her that day, and maybe they rode her a bit close, but... Gee, the last little bit, even though he wouldn't go straight, I Did It For Love was still going better than her on that occasion. So if I'm going to take one out of that race, and the other one is that Spirit of Aquata. He was back and never got a real crack at them. So I thought she had as much chance as to perform as they did, and she didn't quite hit the line. So well drawn here to get down the outside, but absolute D-Day for her.
You're on top selection currently, a $10 chance, not enough effort. What sort of price do you think this horse should and will be?
I think around I wouldn't want to take under about $7, but I think about $7 is about his right price.
All right. What's the market doing there, Queen?
We've got I Did It For Love, a market leader at $6.50, China Affair at $7.50, with the General, That Girl, $8, Wilmot Pass, $9, one of Trent Langscale's favourite sayings: if you find the winner here, the value will take care of itself.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? So the numbers are one.
Hang on, before you start.
Going early again.
Half just texted.
Oh, no.
He slept in.
He wants the whole lot. He wants the whole lot.
The full
well, that's fair enough.
Selection.
Given,
and
fair
he, enough. You get a chance at redemption.
Redemption.
Now, could be an ESPN 30
you
for
know
30.
What? Dino, he's trying to put me off here. Clearly trying to put me off here. But we'll start in the first leg with numbers 3, 4, 5, 7, and 9. I go to the second leg, and we'll be very careful with this leg. 7, 2, 10, and 3. And in the third leg, we'll go 10, 4, 7, and 13. And coming home with the lucky last, 1, 4, 9, 5, and 7.
Very well played. Rating there for Macca there, Dean.
Yeah, no, got golf applause for that one. Very good performance.
Look how happy he is as well.
No, relieved. It means I might be able to come back next Friday.
Carry over champion.
Defending champion.
Next Friday.
Let's
we'll
hope so.
Back. Don't worry about that. Macca's Cracker coming up in just a second as well. But before we get there, the world-famous Formula Bet as well. Don't forget to jump on the website, rsn.net.au. Register your details for a chance to be Dean's contestant each week here on the Friday Form. And Dean, who's your contestant tomorrow and your best two for tomorrow?
Yeah, we got a little result last week for the contestant. I think it was about $156. So hopefully we can go a little bit better for Peter Holly of Beveridge. For Peter, we are having $40 to win on race 3, number 4, White Hibiscus. $40 to win on race 8, number 10, Garin Piero. And $40 on the All Up of the Pair. Race 3, number 4, into race 8, number 10 for Peter Holly of Beveridge.
Current odds there, Quinny.
What a stitch up. I didn't need the calculator this week, and I drove 45 minutes so I could have access to one. $2 by $5, the All Up comes to $10.
You knew that was
you've got that one.
No, you actually would have been genuinely sacked if you'd stuffed that one up. And also, Macca's Cracker, that's what I'm running with. Hopefully we can start with a bang. A bit of a value selection tomorrow, Dean. Have you given us a bit of a hint earlier?
I have, yes. Spoiler alert, down to the last. I think race 9, number 1, not enough effort. We'll run a terrific race first up. At currently, Quinny?
$10.
We're also going to chat now to an English teacher.
Yes, and history teacher.
And history teacher, which he has a fascinating backstory. We spoke to him through the middle of the year, and we're having him on again in the pre-season. Chris, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you, boys?
We're going very well. First of all, how was Christmas and a bit of the off-season break? Did you get much time, and what did you get up to?
Actually, I went back home for a week, and then I went back teaching because I made a bit of money. So I went back teaching for a few weeks. So to finish the year, I went up and was doing some history and English teaching at Redcliffe High. So
what's the reaction when the English teacher walks in and he's played for the Melbourne Storm about 10 weeks earlier?
Yeah, it took a while for the kids to get the hang of it, that that I could do both. They thought I was a dumb footballer for a while, but they eventually started listening to me.
Oh, how good is that?
That's a great story.
Imagine having a professional sportsman just waltz in after playing for the premiership team.
Well,
that
used to happen in the old days, but not now in the professional age. Amazing. It's quite amazing, isn't it? So how difficult a decision was it, Chris, that sort of the end of 2019, I think you'd sat down with your dad and worked out, are you going to stay teaching or are you going to have one last crack at an NRL career?
Yeah, it was a tough call because, like, I mean, I enjoyed living up on the Sunshine Coast and I had a good job, so it was a bit of a tough call, but I sort of decided that what I enjoyed doing was football, so I was going to give it, you know, one last crack, if that's the way you want to put it, so I'll just give it a last shot, and luckily for me, it came off, I guess.
So when Craig Bellamy or the Melbourne Storm approach you, what's the conversation like as well? Do they outline a specific role that they want you to play? Do they want versatility? What's the main message from the recruiting team? And how'd they first get in touch?
It's sort of a bit more informal than that because they send blokes back to play with us all the time. So they sort of talk to you and they sort of said, you know, they were interested in me. But then in the off-season, I think you remember that, you know, they weren't sure if, you know, who was coming back and who was there. So they're obviously trying to sort those things out first, and then they sort of sort out the bottom end last sort of thing. So they were just like, oh, yeah, we think you can play footy, and then they sort of gave me a development contract late sort of thing. So they're just looking for people that they know can play and can work hard.
And that first game, obviously, you played, your mum and dad, Mick and Pauline, isn't it, that came down from Ashford. Tell us where Ashford is and how exciting was that for you, for them to come down? And I think they might have even been like the ball retrievers in the crowd in that sense.
Yeah, Mick and Pauline, they're from Ashford. So Ashford, just south of the Queensland border, so inland, like sort of near Gundawindi, is the closest big town you might have heard of.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the club got them down out of ball retrievers, so they couldn't fly out of Brisbane. It cost too much. They had to drive to Sydney, which is an 8-hour drive.
Wow.
And then they flew down to Melbourne. And, of course, at that time we weren't allowed to have crowds, so where the crowds should have been were mum and dad wearing face masks and gloves and cruising around throwing the ball back to the ball boys. But like I said at the time, dad's got dicky knees and can't move, so I'm not sure how he was getting around too well. And mum's half blind, so she was shocked to get there.
Classic.
They got plenty of airtime too.
Oh, they did.
They were on TV a hell of a lot, so they'll be very happy with that.
Well, they were half the crowd, weren't they?
exactly. What in terms of your development over the year with the Storm as well, what have you learnt most in the last sort of 12 months?
Oh, geez, that's tough. I don't know. I sort of just learned all the systems to the point, you know, where you can't forget them. They're sort of burned in the back of your brain, and you come back this year and, you know, someone calls a play, you don't need to, you know, scramble and think, oh, what does that mean again? It's all just in the back of your head. And then you've also seen blokes, you know, win a comp now. I guess you're sort of, you know, you're a part of that. You know what it takes, and you sort of, you know what levels you've got to reach, and you've got those blokes, same blokes training with you now, and you see what they're training like, and if you can keep up with them, then, you're close enough.
It's a pretty interesting time over the Christmas break because we all like to stuff our faces with a bit of food, and especially in the new year, we like to celebrate a little bit as well. As an athlete who, you know, is constantly over 100 kilos, are you able to eat whatever you want through this period? Or I'm interested in your diet. Do you get to load up and have 2 weeks off and not think about what you're putting into your body?
No, so I started training in sort of the end of November. They started sending out running programs and stuff for us, so we had started training. And then we sort of, during Christmas, my general approach is to train a heap, so I try and keep running. Mm-hmm. And then I give myself, I sort of eat what I want. So I put on a bit of weight, but I'm not going to shut myself off from a good feed that mum's cooked in order to, you know, come back slightly less fat on me. I'll do the hard work later to get rid of it, because mum's a real good cook.
Time to switch codes. We're going to talk a bit of football now, Ramble Code, and Callum McManaman joins us on the line after scoring a cracking goal for the Melbourne Victory on the weekend. Callum, good morning to you.
Good morning. You okay?
We're going very well. Tell us about, first of all, scoring your first goal for the Melbourne Victory. The nice to have crowds at the football as well over the weekend. How did it feel? Tell you what, you started on a high too. It was a cracker with the left.
Yeah, thank you. No, it was brilliant. Obviously, to score on my A-League debut, I was delighted. It was brilliant seeing the fans for the first time as well. So, just a bit disappointed with the result in the end, me and the lads.
Yeah, the second half didn't quite pan out the way we'd hoped. What were the learnings, and what was Grant Brebner's message after the loss?
it's kind of just keep going because we played very well first half. So I think we've shown what we can do first half. We just maybe needed a few more goals if we could have got it. And I think we're just tired near the end because we haven't had many games, a bit of lack of match fitness. But that'll come. We've got some good players and there's still some players to come to catch up and get up to speed. So we've got two new lads who've just came out of quarantine. So once they get up to full match fitness, I think we'll be flying.
Yeah, Callum, tell us about how Grant Brebner first got in contact with you and what attracted you to coming out to play here with Melbourne Victory.
First of all, he got in contact. It was out the blue, really. It was a bit of a mad one, but as soon as I spoke to him on the phone, I was ready to come over, and I couldn't wait. As soon as he told me everything about the club and that, I started doing some research and checked out some videos online and stuff and seeing how good the fans was, and it just looked like a great club. And Brebs told me it was a family club and all good things, and I just couldn't wait to get over. It took a bit longer with the quarantine and the visa situation, but I'm delighted to be here now.
Did you know Grant Brebner, or did you know of the Melbourne Victory before the phone call?
Yeah, I knew of Melbourne Victory a little bit, yeah, but I didn't know Grant at the time, no. But he was brilliant. He was ringing me daily for months, really, and keeping me up to date with everything that was going on. And yeah, I was obviously, I'm buzzing to be here now.
And was it an attraction to get? I know the UK at the moment is in a bit of trouble with the COVID situation, obviously in the new national lockdown as well a couple of days ago. Was that another attraction in these strange times to actually come to a country where we've got it a lot more under control than others at the moment?
Yeah, I think it was actually, yeah. I think it was for a lot of people, yeah, because obviously with what's going on back at home and stuff, and the football's taking a hit with obviously being an old fan there, and I felt like it was just a perfect time for a change. And obviously when someone shows a lot of trust in you like Debs did and the club did, it was a no-brainer really for me.
Yeah, there's a real English sort of feel about Melbourne Victory at the moment. You've got a number of players there. Tell us about Ryan Shotton, and he obviously won't play on the weekend, but he's just got out of quarantine, and what can we expect from him?
Yeah, I've played with Ryan before at Wigan, so I know quite a lot about him. He's a good lad and he's a good player. I think he's quick and he's strong and he's a very organised, experienced defender. So yeah, I've no doubt he'll do well when he gets up to match fitness.
Now, Callum, one big difference that you'll be finding is playing football in the height of an Australian summer. How are you going to deal with playing in maybe 38-degree heat in a couple of weeks when summer finally arrives in Melbourne?
I know, it's going to be crazy. I'm not used to it, but I'm looking forward to the new challenge. But yeah, it's better than playing in the cold in the UK, so I'll take it.
Bit different to the Liverpudlian summer, where everyone gets their top off when it's about 20 degrees over there, and we're all partying. But it's going to be a new challenge for you. In terms of that, do you have to train a little bit differently for it? Have you worked on anything in particular with your fitness? Because you're in completely different conditions over here.
Yeah, well, not at the moment, but obviously training in the middle of the day. Yeah, obviously it'll. Some days it's the 30s or high 20s, and I'm not really used to that. So I think the training will hopefully get me used to being prepared for the games that are the hot ones.
You talk about, before you started, everyone was speaking about the fact that you love to take on players on the field, and that's certainly what you did with that first goal. Is that the way you approach your football?
Yeah, definitely. That's the way I've always played. I want to excite the fans, and I want to get the fans up. And I'm very direct. So I'd always try and beat a man. Even if I get tackled, I'll go again. So, yeah, I'd expect a lot more of that, yeah.
You've mentioned the fans a number of times. How important are not only the Melbourne Victory fans, but fans in any game of football at the professional level? Is that something you feed off as a player? Is it something you have missed, obviously, playing without fans for the majority of last season? Just tell us how much it adds to your game.
Yeah, it's massive. You don't realise it until it goes, I'd say. Because when I was playing last season in England and there was no fans, it was
just not the same. You just don't get that nervous energy, that same buzz. Hard to explain. And obviously, when that goal went in on the weekend, it all come back. Like, that's what you miss. Like that adrenaline rush. So no, it was great. It definitely spurs you on and gives you that nervous energy, I'd say.
Bharat Sundaresan is a cricket journalist. He joins us at the SCG. Bharat, good morning and welcome back to RSN.
Good morning, guys. How's it going? The Pokorsky era has begun, I guess.
I like that. We're very happy down here in Melbourne. Very proud of our young man who's fought through a fair bit to finally get that baggy green yesterday. First of all, being at the SCG, what was it like with a small crowd in there? And do you think it changed the mindset of the players at all? Because it must have been quite odd for Test cricketers to run out in front of only about 10,000 people at the SCG.
Yeah. Before I get to the players in the crowd, it was personally strange wearing a mask all day long inside the press box, and to see cops in the media center basically policing whether we're all got our masks on. So you have to be very, very careful with. But I think that's the new normal. That's the reality of the world, the life that we are experiencing right now. But the crowd, to be honest, with their masks on, were pretty loud at certain points, even when Will Pokorsky got his first run or when he got to his 50, or even when, Indians with or without masks, we can be quite noisy on a cricket ground anyway. So I don't think the noise factor was too different. But yeah, it was strange watching test match, especially like an iconic test match like the New Year's Test in Australia with very few people, or in like 8,000 people, but so spread out that you couldn't make out how many there were. So, yeah, it was a strange feeling, but at least I'm glad there were people there, out there watching Test cricket.
Yeah, exactly. It's good to have the game there and up and running. Now, it feels weird to be throwing forward to the fourth Test already, but where's the fourth Test going to be, do you think, Apparat? Will it be in Sydney? Will it be in Brisbane? What's the feeling there?
It's really up in the air. It's been interesting, right? The last few days, more people have spoken about the fourth, or people have spoken more about the fourth test than the third test. The day before the test match, both Tim Payne and Ajinkya Rahane were asked more about where they're going to go next rather than what is going to happen the next day. I think it's just been a very confusing few days for all concerned. As far as I know, I did write that story a few days ago about them being reluctant to go to Brisbane, the Indian team. I don't know how much has changed. Cricket Australia seemed very confident that India have, or confident about having reassured the Indian team and the BCCI that it should be clear and they should have no issues in Brisbane. There wouldn't be police within the hotel. There'd be freedom for them to just move around. But how convinced the Indians are at this stage, I really don't know. I haven't heard from them the last 24 hours. So we'll have to wait and watch. But as of now, I guess it is in Brisbane. And the SCG curator has clearly said he's not preparing a pitch for that test match, which would mean, either Gabba or go home, as extreme as it sounds. But hopefully everything settles down and we do have a fourth test.
Yeah, fingers crossed. In terms of that as well, and the communication from the Indian team, there seems to be a lot of whispers. But we don't seem to hear a lot from either the BCCI or Indian team management surrounding their opinion. Do you think we should hear more from them and the fans, because there's so many Indian fans in Australia, can actually hear a bit more from their team and connect a bit more with them?
Guys, having covered Indian cricket for, 13 years now? Yeah, it's been 2 years since I moved here. That's how it's always been. It's a cultural thing in India. You won't hear too many people going on record about a lot of things, especially matters which can lead to controversy or which are around the controversy. So I'm not very surprised that we haven't had anyone come out on record. Look at the access the media has to the players. Cricket Australia has been doing Zoom calls pretty much once every week from, March or April last year. India did zero Zoom calls from the time the pandemic struck, before the first Zoom call they had at the start of this tour. So that's pretty much how it always has been. Should it get better? Should it be more transparent? Of course, yes. But again, like I said, it's a cultural thing. And if anything, this Indian team or this Indian team management, Ravi Shastri is generally more on record than anyone else around Indian cricket. He doesn't hold back. And I think with this issue in particular, it's a case of the team management experiencing what they're experiencing here and the BCCI being so far away from what's happening here. It's all a lack of understanding in that capacity as well about why Australia is asking them to follow certain protocols. Because the mindset is, and I'll be honest here, speaking to some of the players or during the course of the tour, is, well, but you don't have cases here, so why can't we just be like normal Australians? We'll follow whatever protocols the government puts in place. But the fact that, and I have had this conversation with a few of them, where I have told them that, well, but the fact is the cases are fewer in Australia because of the protocols and the system in place. So it's just, I don't know, what 10 days to go on this tour. Hopefully it all gets sorted out. But I think it's just like a confusion at many levels.
Hindsight's a wonderful thing, but do you think the Aussies erred a little in terms of playing Dave Warner when he wasn't quite 100%, or do you think they had to take that risk?
I think one all, just the way their batting was, I think they had no option but to take that risk. And like, good on David Warner to be okay with, like, you know, putting his hand up and saying, it doesn't matter whether I'm 100% or not, I'll still put my body on the line for my country. And it did look to him, like, it did look like it was hindering him. That second single he took yesterday, it didn't look too good. Some people have attributed the shot he got out to maybe where his groin was. But I thought it was nicely done by the Indians as well. Like, just watching David Warner in the nets, he'd been practicing a lot against around the wicket because that's become a norm, hasn't it, since Stuart Broad and at the Ashes. But the Indians stuck to over the wicket, and maybe it had a little to do with that. I watched David Warner's first net at the MCG when he wasn't part of the bubble against Sean Abbott. He didn't look 100% then, and he didn't look 100% even on the day before the test. But the fact that they've gone ahead with it, it says a lot about David Warner's character.
Now, Rishabh Pant, did we see yesterday perhaps why he isn't known as the best keeper in India after a couple of drop catches in the field?
The Rishabh Pant story, he seriously has become... He literally is the representation of what social media is, right? Like, he's a hero one day, he's the villain the next day. It really depends on which side of the fence you sit with Rishabh Pant. Look, I think it's something that we've seen a lot in the past where he has made mistakes as a wicketkeeper, and also with his batting, it can be a bit of a hit and miss. But there are those who believe that he is the superhero who should play every game for India. Who was initially held back by MS Dhoni, and now he's held back by Ridhiman Saha. But when you make mistakes the kind he made yesterday, it can have a huge impact on the match, as we've seen during this Test series. Where do we go with Rishabh Pant? I guess the only way he can help himself is to come out and smash another 100 like he did at the SCG 2 years ago.
RSN Summer Breakfast Club.